Welcome to Only Murders in My Mind, a Random Thought production. Hi, I'm Carol Bissett, a crime writer, and I invite you with my co-presenters, Liz Hedgecock and Mike Jackson, each week to our conversations on all things murderous. Hello everybody, it's Thursday, it's 5 p.m. and it's Only Murders in My Mind with my co-presenters Liz Hedgecock.
Hello.
And Mike Jackson. Hi.
Hi Carol.
Hi both. Lovely to see you both again. Aren't we doing well with all these podcasts? We're getting quite a few under our belt now, aren't we?
Yes.
Yes. So.
And if you're listening to us, please let us know.
Yes. Our numbers go up and down, but we're really pleased. Anybody's listening, I'll be quite honest with you. And
if you're not listening, we don't really mind because we just like talking to ourselves.
Well, yeah. They won't know that, will they?
Because no, of course
they're
not
listening.
No, they're not listening.
No, but people.
Well, if they're not listening, why aren't they listening?
Yeah.
And why are we even probably to talk to them?
Yes.
Yes. Anyway, moving swiftly on.
I was going to say the feedback I've had off people who have listened has been that they've enjoyed it. So if the people that listen to it, no matter how big or how small, I'm just glad that they're getting some fun out of it. Mm. It is we do talk about murder and crime and quite dark things, but we always manage to bring it down to our level, don't we? And talking about humour, today's title is The Humour in Crime or The Humour of Crime, because a lot of the things we watch and read have got funny bits in. And we were just discussing before we started recording that this sometimes is, there has to be a bit of light next to the darkness, otherwise it might get just too much.
And it makes the darkness darker.
Well, that's true, actually. I never thought of that.
If you've gone from something, you know, maybe light and a bit funny, or, you know, someone behaving a silly way, and then, you know, you have something really powerful, then that's going to make it.
Yeah, because from an artist's point of view, if you've got bright white next to black, that black looks so much blacker, doesn't it? So that's a
art
visual
metaphor.
An art metaphor. So humour, the humour of crime, and we can all go through and mention books where we think that this is relevant. The first one that I'm going to mention, and again, this is a bit of a Marmite thing. I think you either love this or hate this. Is Richard Osman's Thursday Murder Book? No, Murder Club. Mm. I found this really refreshing, and there are some bits in it that are like, as I say, the last one he wrote, there was a bit in it that made me cry.
I haven't read it yet, so no spoilers.
I'm not going to tell you where or when or how, but it made me cry, but it also makes me laugh a lot. And
so
I think it's
what makes you laugh in that series particularly.
It's the quirky characters and the way they react to each other. It's the fact that it's set in a retirement home,
yeah,
and people are supposed to be past the best buy sell date, if you like. And it's just this rebellious nature of this group of people. And they're all so different. They're all totally different. And I won't go into it in too much depth because I would, as I say, it's one of those things if you want to read it.
I suppose the thing is you have, I think, two characters where you think, okay, I can see how you're a detective.
Yes.
And then you have two characters where you're like, okay, you know, it's just, I sort of see why you're there, because it's providing that balance.
Yeah.
But you would never have expected them to be detectives, but the four of them together.
Yes.
Is the thing.
Yeah. Yeah. They do, they spark off each other. And I think, I personally think it's very well written, and they're making a film of it.
Indeed they are. Yes. Have they said who's going to be Joyce yet?
Yes. I think it is. And I can see her. She was in, it'll come to me.
Okay, because I know Helen Mirren's going to be Elizabeth.
That's who I'm thinking of. No, she's Elizabeth, isn't she? Yeah. No, I don't know who's going to be Joyce yet, but I'm sure it's out there if we look for
We're
it.
All waiting with bated breath.
Yeah, Helen Mirren will be good as...
she'll be fantastic.
Yeah.
So, although some people were saying Fiona Shaw, and yes, I can completely see that as well.
I did have pictured a few actors in my mind for taking the parts, but, you know. What makes you laugh in crime? That sounds good, doesn't it, Liz? What makes you chuckle when somebody's getting murdered?
I think quite often it's partly to do with characters. And if there's that kind of mismatch between the character and the situation, and also the situation is a big thing, like with Thursday Murder Club, you have a retirement home and you have them inviting people to come and chat to them about murders in there, like, you know, they have to like argue over the meeting room because the Jigsaw Club keep wanting it. That's right. And stuff like that. It's the incongruity of
Jigsaw
it.
Jigsaw Club.
Well, you know, they've got a place as well. You know, everyone should have access to the room. And, you know, things like the wine and the biscuits come out.
Yes.
And,
you
know,
yeah.
You just think it's as far from, you know, having like a police interview room as it could possibly be.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's that sort of thing. And I like sometimes, you know, again, it's I think it's the incongruity. If you think about Hercule Poirot being like a funny, fussy little man who wants square crumpets.
Yeah.
You know, and is always well turned out and is so proud of his moustache. And they have Miss Marple, who's kind of a wispy, woolly lady who everybody underestimates.
Yeah.
And things like that.
Captain so. Hastings is
yes.
a bit of a character.
Oh, yes. Indeed. Yes.
I was going to say brainless character, but that might be unkind. But he is almost the foil, isn't he?
He's the one. Yes. He's always one step behind,
yes.
isn't he?
Yes.
Yes. It's, yeah. it's kind of the... I think the thing they said about Watson, isn't it, is that you know, your kind of sidekick should
That's
be
right.
sort of just slightly below the average intelligence
yes.
so that the reader always feels like, oh, well, I'm ahead of you, matey.
Yeah.
yeah.
So, yes.
You want to feel that you could pair up with these detectives and help them.
Mm. Yes.
I think, yeah, you know when men go to football matches with the kit on hoping that somebody will have, you know, an accident on the pitch and the manager will go, Joe, you're on now.
It's obviously that you wouldn't bother with the subs. You would just get some randomer out of the
that's
stands.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. So it's one of those things.
Yeah. But, so what do you find fun in murder, Mike?
I have to say one of my favourites is, and I can never get his first name right, is it Kem? Kem McDonnell?
I think it's pronounced Kev, I'm not sure.
An Irishman.
C-A-I-M-H.
Yeah. So. Stranger Times.
Oh, yes.
Mm. And also the... Dublin Trilogy, yes. Dublin Detective, I think it's called.
Now it's gone past, well past three.
Oh, it's gone, he's on about yeah. five or six. But it's the main character there, a policeman called Bunny, who is extremely violent.
yeah, yes.
I'm laughing already.
With his hockey.
His hurley
stick.
Oh,
yeah.
My.
He's got a name for it, hasn't he?
yes, yeah. I mean, that's in the Dublin Detective, but the other one, which is all about ghosts and what have you. I mean, some of the malevolent creatures and ghosts they come across are really, really bloodthirsty.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And it's almost as though the humour is there to balance out the bloodthirstiness and the goriness of some of it.
And then you've got Bancroft.
And Bancroft.
Who's great. I mean, he's a bit Jackson Lamb-ish.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, he is.
Yeah. yeah.
Really outrageously outspoken, nasty man.
But you chuckle.
But he makes you laugh.
Yeah, you chuckle about it.
And I think it's because both Bancroft in Stranger Times and Bunny, who is the detective in the Dublin Detective series, are both larger-than-life characters. They're the sort of people that you probably would never come across in real life. They're exaggerated. All the worst points that you could think about somebody, they've all been put together in one person or two people. And in some ways, it is that outrageousness that makes you smile at times. Mm. You know, some of the things they say are so outrageous that you just have to laugh.
You know,
you just have to giggle at them.
You do as well. You chuckle, don't
yeah.
you?
Yeah. And usually they come out with these comments. You know, Bunny might come out with a comment when he's bashing somebody around the head with his hurley stick. You know, so there's that mixture of comedy and violence happening at the same time, which
yes.
almost seems like a contradiction. But when it's done well, it seems to work. It seems to create that
yes.
should I say harmony? I don't know if that's the right word.
Yeah, well, I suppose it's like black comedy, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it is.
Yes.
It's that black humour.
You've got the balance, haven't you? I mean, as a retired nurse, we didn't laugh at people's misfortunes, but there'd be things that would make us giggle.
Mm.
And sometimes you had to have that when you were working in really a man once turned up at A&E. This is a long time ago, with all his bike equipment on. You know, he had the gloves with the big fins on and the big goggles. Yeah. And he rushed in and he said, has my daughter been brought in? And we were all like, oh, my dear, what's happened? He said, I stopped at some traffic lights and when I got home, she wasn't there. Anyway, long story short was she'd stood up to pull her dress down and he'd ridden off without her. So we laughed at that.
As Liz just did.
Yeah, I'm very relieved.
Oh, and that little story.
I can just imagine it happening. That's
that little story is a true story in my nursing book of Just a Little Prick, by the way.
But it's, if you think of something like Blackadder, and the later during the First World War.
Oh, yes.
Very dire times.
Oh, yeah.
But the humour that came out of that as well.
Yes.
And I think it's, in a program like that, it's the poignancy that comes out when you have moments of humour against real tragic moments.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're sort of interspersed with one another.
Yes.
And
yes.
I think you almost need the humour to carry you past the tearful, the tragic parts of those stories.
Yeah. Mm. Because, they will have laughed at things in the trenches. You know, they'd have much to laugh about.
No, you'd cry if you didn't.
They would have, things would have appeared funny to them. I'm going to mention one of my favourite TV programmes, which we hope is coming back soon, and that's Only Murders in the Building. And that is funny.
Yes.
You know, and you might call it a cosy murder mystery. By all means, call it a cosy murder mystery, but I love it. And again, the characters, you've got two older people who are men and a young female.
Yes.
And they spark off each other.
Yeah. Well, you've got Steve Martin, who is an actor.
Yes.
Very much so. And, you know, I think he's kind of down on his luck, isn't he, at the beginning?
Yes.
And then he finds some success. And of course, this all plays into what's going on.
Yeah.
And then you have Martin Short, whose character is a producer,
He's a Broadway producer, yeah.
Yes.
And he's also down on his luck. He's been threatened with eviction from his apartment.
Yes.
So, yeah.
So what was he living on at one point?
Dips.
He was living on dips. That was it.
I love a good dip.
Do you not find, though, that's the complete opposite to somebody like Ken McDonnell, in as much as the programme you've just been talking about, they almost set out to be comedies that had some murder in them.
Yes.
Whereas I think something like Blackadder and what have you started off with something that you needed humour to come in to balance out the dark side. I should imagine with Cozy Mystery, I mean, I'm thinking of Murder in Paradise and what have you, Death in Paradise.
Yes.
I'll get one of these episodes, I'm going to get the name of that programme right.
Paradise Lost.
Paradise Lost.
Bird of Paradise. Paradise Postponed.
This paradise place where things happen, often death. Mm. Any humour that's in there is almost part of it, because the murder part of it, the mystery part of it, it was always very low key. You know, you don't see a lot of bludgeoning or blood or
people. I mean, don't people watch shows like Death in Paradise? Because it's all the lovely setting and the characters.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, and like Midsummer Murders as well.
Yes, exactly.
You know, you're there for the experience rather than I'm going to solve this murder this week.
Yes, yeah. So it takes you out of yourself. I mean, my husband isn't a great watcher of murder mysteries. They're cosy murder mysteries, but he loves Death in Paradise because it takes you to a warm island.
Yes.
I can see
people
the attraction
in bright clothes.
It's the cosy bit.
Yeah.
It's the cosy genre.
And for the humour. You know, because there is, it's usually the lead detective, isn't it, that's the humorous person in it sort of thing.
So what about humour in our books being as rural? Relatively murderous.
Yes. Well, I think, and certainly when I write my short stories, I think adding a bit of humour in adds something to the story, in as much as it's, if you're writing about somebody being killed, you're not expecting a funny punchline. Possibly. I don't know.
I don't know. Well, I mean, if you think of a James Bond film, then quite often there'll be all sorts of things and then a quip. From Mr. Bond himself.
But yes.
I mean, I just think there is a lot of humour in life.
Yes, even when, you know, things go wrong.
Yes.
And I remember going, God bless him, following with the hearse for my dad's funeral, and it stopped. And I thought, what's the matter? You know, and they walked up to us and we broke down.
Oh, no.
You know, just what you need when you're on the way to a funeral. Mm. And I was so upset, but I started giggling.
Mm.
You know, it was just that, it just seemed a bit ironic sort of thing, because we'd have always said he'd be late for his own funeral.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
You know, it's things like that. Yeah. So that made everybody smile.
Mm-hmm.
Have you got a story you're going to read?
This is a bit of, not so much crime, but there is some murder in this one, but hopefully some humour as well. And it's a 100-word story. Did I tell you, by the way, that I'm just about to to complete another one of my books, which you've got 100-word stories in?
I believe you may have mentioned it.
I may have mentioned it.
In the past, yes. But well done.
Yeah. How is the novella?
Moving on quickly.
Sorry.
This one's called Trick or Treat. There's the front doorbell again, Charlie. Must be the third time tonight. Be more youngsters, I expect, out trick-or-treating. Shall I go or will you? I'll go, love. You have a rest and finish your cup of tea. What shall we do this time, dear? Trick-or-treat. A treat, I think, Charlie. We did a trick last time. Okay, my sweetheart, a treat it shall be. How many would you like? Bring them all in, Charlie. I'm feeling peckish. Some nice young chewy bones will go down a treat with this cup of tea of mine.
Oh, oh dear.
But some humour.
You've got another one?
Yep. Number 6. I'm telling you, Wendy, it's the best book I've ever read. The instructions are clear and the illustrations are wonderful. I've been experimenting on Trevor with one or two of the suggestions. He complained about feeling poorly after I tried out idea number 4, so I knew I was on the right track. In the end, I went for number 6. It worked a treat. A lot more blood than I was expecting, but it soon cleaned up. The two ladies continued chatting as they thumbed through their favourite book, 10 Easy Ways to Kill Your Husband.
Indeed. Have you got something there, Carol?
Yeah, this is from my second Warrington detective. It's called The Vein Killer. Now, there's a detective in this called Colin Briggs. Colin is so easygoing, and he always gets stuck with the female detective who is a bit pushy, you know.
Just slightly.
Yeah, thinks they're better than him. So they're on the way to Sixth Form College to interview some students because one of their fellow students has been found dead. Detective Constable Colin Briggs and DC Ruby Wall parked in the visitors' car park at Warrington Sixth Form College. It was almost full even at this time of the morning. They obviously guess a lot of visitors, remarked Ruby. Obviously, Colin murmured to himself as his partner got out of the car. Ruby was everything he wasn't, clever, confident and a go-getter. If he had to describe her in one word, that one word would be scurry. Come on, Colin, she called over her shoulder as she bounded up the steps. At 5 feet 5 inches tall and a couple of stone overweight, she could move surprisingly quickly. Colin tried to catch up with her. He wasn't much taller than his partner and was more than aware that he carried too much weight, whereas Ruby didn't seem to notice her excess. She was already speaking to the receptionist by the time he reached her side. We will need a room where we can speak to the students and an appropriate adult in attendance. It's not an interview, you understand, don't you? We'll make different arrangements if that's necessary. The woman behind the desk nodded and picked up the phone. Please take a seat. She indicated to a row of chairs along a glass wall. As they sat down, Ruby made a face. Not a good use of police time, having to wait around like this, she said, not bothering to keep her voice down. Colin turned his head away from the receptionist's glare. She's doing everything she can, Ruby, he said quietly. This all had to be sorted very quickly. Just chill, Ruby tutted. Well, I don't think it's good enough, Colin smiled at the receptionist and shrugged. but now she was giving them both daggers. Finally, she called over to them. I know you want to speak to the class altogether, but the science lecture is off today. So they're all taking that period of private study in the library. They should all be there. Should? Ruby said loudly. The receptionist bristled. We can't force them to go there. It's just a suggestion. Right, where's the library? Ruby was getting to the end of her chill factor. The woman came out from behind the desk, and for a moment Colin feared she was about to hit Ruby, but thankfully she just went towards a pair of glass doors. Through there, then another set of double doors, and then you're in the library. She handed a sheet of paper to Ruby. Here is the room we've allocated to you, should you still need it, and Miss James will be there working. So that's your appropriate adult. You're welcome. The receptionist went back to the desk, leaving Ruby speechless, something Colin decided probably didn't happen often. Ruby turned to Colin. Right, you go up to the room, she consulted the sheet. Room 16B, and I'll go and round up the students. Colin was about to say that he was senior to her and didn't appreciate the way she spoke to him, but Ruby had already barged through the glass doors. He sighed, directed a conciliatory smile at the receptionist, who returned his look with one signalling, poor you. So that's the relationship. She's a good detective,
yes,
but she is very much a high flyer, and poor Colin is a plodder.
Oh, but they do have affection for
they
each
do
other.
They do, yes. So,
and they are in some ways a good team,
yes. Oh yeah, that's yeah. The thing, he's always the counterbalance to whoever he's with. But as I say, he is always the most senior one in the relationship and never seems to be able to get that fact over to whoever he's working with. Mm. It's usually a woman. Liz.
But I think that relationship comes across through that little bit of humorous period, you know, which was not necessarily crucial to the story.
No. It's just building.
You could have said that she was bussy and he was a bit downtrodden, but you used humour rather.
And it's also showing it rather than just saying.
Yes, yeah. You use that dialogue to get it across. You know, so mm-hmm. you, the reader walks away having a clear picture in their head of Colin, Ruby and the poor receptionist as well, probably.
Because she doesn't see her career staying in Warrington. She's heading for the Met. Yeah. You know, that's her idea where she wants to be. Yeah.
And I think when we use humour in our stories, we're not doing it because we are comedians or anything like that. We're using it as a way to help to tell the story. You know, that we feel it adds something to the story. Rather than just adding humour for the sake of it, you're actually doing it because it's a way of portraying a particular character or a particular scene or a particular idea.
And most of my characters, I think, like a lot of writers, are a reflection of somebody or part of somebody I know. You know, they're not totally made up. I'm hoping they never recognise themselves, but but it's usually sort of, sometimes I can visualise the person, how they look, but their character is taken from somebody else, so they're like a mutation, if you like, of two people. So now I know you've got humour in your stories because I laugh out loud at them sometimes. They're supposed to be funny, by the way. I'm not.
Yeah, they are. They actually are.
I'm not saying I'm laughing at the wrong bits. So you've got a piece for us to read out, I hope.
I've got a little bit here. Yes, this is from, it's book two of the Booker and Fitch series, which I write with Paula, who is a friend of the show. And this bit is where, in book two, one of the key things that happens is there's going to be a production of Macbeth done by the local Amdram company. And of course, they want to make a big success of it. And so they have somehow sweet-talked a slightly faded film star into appearing as part of it. And she is about to turn up at Jade's magic shop. So Jade was about to ask a customer if she needed help when the shop door opened and a petite figure glided in. Jade recognised her immediately, though she had never seen her in the flesh before. She was wearing a long leather coat and knee-high boots, and a pink scarf was draped artistically round her throat in a way that Jade couldn't have achieved in a month of Sundays. Her hair was long and honey blonde, with paler strands framing her face. The clincher, perhaps, was that she was wearing sunglasses in October, despite the cloudy day. She removed them and flashed a megawatt smile. That's Tallulah Levantine. It couldn't be anyone else. In comparison with the photograph of her, which had top billing at Haysby Little Theatre, however, she looked more like Tallulah's mother. "Good afternoon," said Tallulah. "I wonder if you could help me. I'm in town for the production, The Scottish Play, and I'm looking for some accessories." Netta came out of the back room and stopped dead. "It's her," she murmured. Then, "It's you!" "Indeed it is, darling," said Tallulah, extending a hand with long, dusky pink nails. "Bet those turn red for the production," thought Jade. Netta hurried forward, cradled Tallulah's hand as if it were a baby bird, and dipped in a sort of curtsy. Tallulah regarded her in the manner of a merciful queen. Jade waited for a moment, and when nothing happened, cleared her throat. "What sort of thing would you be looking for, Miss Levantine?" "Oh, call me Tallulah. Everyone does, darling. No airs and graces here, I assure you." Her laugh tingled like a music box. "I don't know if you've seen the posters, but I am taking on the role of Lady Macbeth, and it's so important to get the details right." "Oh, I see." Jade picked up Netta's book from the counter. "Well, if you were interested in the right way to make magical gestures, for instance..." "Oh, yes," said Tallulah. She drew herself up to what Jade estimated was her full 5'2", even in heeled boots, lifted her arm and spread her fingers. "Perhaps a cloak. I'll have to ask the costume department." "Might I suggest a tartan shawl?" said Jade. "There's a specific Macbeth tartan, and it would show your character's commitment to the plan. You could drape it over one shoulder and use it in various ways." She showed Tallulah her phone. "I love stagecraft," Tallulah purred. "Could you possibly order something like that for me, darling?" "Of course," said Jade. "If I take your number, I can let you know when it comes in. Or deliver it to the theatre, of course." "I could do that," said Netta. "It wouldn't be any trouble." "How kind of you," said Tallulah. "I was worried that, coming back to Haysby after so many years and no longer in my prime, I might be not unwelcome, but overlooked." She pouted and suddenly resembled Netta. "It's such a relief." Then she grimaced and looked more like a naughty schoolgirl. "Now there's just the Scottish play to fret about." "You mustn't fret, Tallulah," said Netta. "You're a star." "Absolutely," said Jade. "But if you are interested in a good luck charm to keep evil away, we do have several. Netta, would you mind introducing Tallulah to our selection?" "I'd be delighted," breathed Netta, and she ushered Tallulah towards a shelf where a variety of silver charms hung on black ribbons and leather thongs. "We have a cat, a four-leaf clover, a horseshoe, and this is a rabbit's foot. Replica, of course, not real." "That looks exactly like something Lady Macbeth would have," said Tallulah, unhooking the rabbit's foot. "Tallulah, would you mind if I took a photo of you with Netta?" asked Jade. "Oh, please do," pleaded Netta. "It would mean the world to me." "Of course," said Tallulah. She stood side on, one foot in front of the other, put an arm round Netta and flung up her chin. An enigmatic smile played around her red lips. Jade wondered why she didn't unleash the megawatt smile, but suspected it was because of laughter lines.
Oh, I like that.
And don't you find that sometimes with a story, you just need one character who is so out, like Tallulah, yes, so outrageous and out there that everybody can identify with her without necessarily knowing her. They'll take, ask, "Oh, I know somebody talks just a bit like that, talks a bit like that."
Yeah.
And they immediately bond with that character and expect that character to be foolish, comic, or whatever. They don't expect it to be serious. They expect maybe the other characters in the book to be serious, but that's the bit of humour that comes across, and that gives that balance, I think.
It's the way Netta almost curts. Well, she did curtsy.
Yeah.
I can imagine somebody doing that when it was, you know, someone that they admired for a long time. But there is a lot of humour in these Finch, and I always forget the other person because I just know them as Jade and Fee.
Yeah,
Booker and Finch. Thank you. I never call them by their surnames. We're really good friends.
Yeah, I've seen you out drinking with the pair of them. Yeah.
I could go out for a drink with them. Yeah, but yeah.
So how did Macbeth go to Lula? Was it?
Oh, there might have been a murder somewhere along the lines.
Oh, there might have been.
Yeah, just one.
Indeed. So, how important do you think humour is?
I think it's very important. I love a little bit of humour in the darkest of books. Obviously, in the appropriate places, you know.
Yes.
It's funny because last night we've been watching Black Mirror.
Oh, yes.
And my husband said to me last night, oh, should we watch an episode? We've not watched an episode for a while. And I went, no, I'm finding them far too depressing. Mm. There's no humour in them.
No.
Mm. Not the last two or three I've watched. There might have been in the earlier editions. Because there isn't that balance. The last one we watched is still haunting me.
Oh, gosh.
So I said to him, no, you'll have to watch the rest of them on your own because...
But some...
Too heavy.
Yeah, but some, there are some books, there are some programmes, and I know that this often comes out with certain genres like, you know, Scandi Noir, for example.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that it's meant to be dark.
Yes.
You know, any humour in that sort of setting, in that sort of book, would be... out of place, completely out of place.
I can think of a couple of the detectives in a couple of the Scandi dramas who do make you smile because of the way they act.
Yeah. Mm. Well, you take something like Ian Rankin's John Rebus.
Yeah.
Yes.
You wouldn't expect him to come out with a lot of... He's not a humorous person.
No. But he does come out with some dry comments.
He comes out with dry comments, yes, yeah. But he's a very dark person. And he will come out with dry comments, especially if he's talking about football teams.
Yes.
You know, I think, is he a hip supporter? I can never work out, but there'll be a bit of, not so much humour as such, almost a sort of a comic throwaway.
Wit rather than
wit.
Yes.
And a dark wit.
Yeah, when the kind of thing where you twist your mouth, you wouldn't laugh.
That's right. Yeah.
When he got his little dog, he'd talk to his little dog because, you know. Because, I mean, I remember somebody saying to Rankin, well, what happens to Rebus's dog when he goes off on these jaunts? Because he just, you know, he hands them over to
You're detective. You're right there, Lister. It's more wit, more sarcasm. It's more fighting. Mm. Whereas not quite humour, is
no.
it?
Yeah.
It might make you smile in a sort of way, but it's not funny.
No, it doesn't. It's not a belly laugh, is it, sort of thing? Yeah.
But in some programmes, it's... as close as you're going to get.
Yes.
You know, with something like John Rebus, that sarcasm, that wit is probably as close as you're going to get to any lightheartedness in what are quite dark stories.
Yes. I can't ever remember any of the Wire in the Blood books by Val McDermott, there being any humour in any of them.
No.
There might have been, a little bit of, a comment that was made, but those are very dark films. Another enjoyable programme. I really liked talking about that. You wouldn't think you could talk for half an hour on crime and humour put in the same sentence, would you?
I think we could talk for half an hour about anything.
Probably most things.
True. Mm. So... until next Thursday at 5 p.m, we will love you and leave you. Don't forget to subscribe, like and listen and tell your friends all about us. So until then, bye. You have been listening to Only Murders in My Mind, a Random Thought production, produced by John Bissett. The music in Peril was composed and recorded by OM Studio Strings.